97.9 FM and 1360 AM WCHL and UNC School of Media and Journalism present Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus is dedicated to in-depth examination of issues of overriding importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the Carolina campus, here's your host, journalism professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, the Knight Commission and its role in reshaping college athletics. Our guest, Arnie Duncan, former U.S. Secretary of Education and the new co-chair of the Knight Commission. Arnie, you've been interested for a long time in the intersection between athletics and academics, going back to the days when your father taught at the University of Chicago. Tell me about those days.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And thanks so much for the opportunity to be on your show. So going back to when I was just a kid, you know, probably 10, 11, 12 years old, as you said, my dad was a psychology professor at the University of Chicago, worked there for over 40 years. But for many of those years, he was the faculty representative to the NCAA. So we would have these fascinating dinner time conversations where he would come home and we would talk about the proper role of athletics in the, you know, in the education experience of being a college student. And he had, you know, very strong and clear values about what, you know, what made sense and what didn't, and was very, very proud of the balance, the appropriate balance at the University of Chicago, where student athletes are always students first, but athletes and athletes second. He also talked about how the chance to be on a team and to play college sports was an amazing training ground for future leaders. And he thought that the dividends, the benefits of having that experience went way beyond being able to, you know, score a touchdown and make a basket or whatever it might be. Then as I got older, I was lucky enough to be able to be a student athlete myself in college and to have a fantastic experience. That was transformative to me. But also growing up playing, you know, basketball on the south and west side of Chicago, grew up with a lot of players who were much, much better than I, who had, you know, had fantastic college careers and made lots of money for their universities, but never got a degree, had nothing to show for it. And they came back home to Chicago and had very tough lives. And that left an indelible mark on me, or a memory for me, that somehow that was just fundamentally unfair, that they were basically being used by their universities. And once they, you know, were no longer valued at university, they basically just cast aside, were thrown away. So a number of things, again, the experiences with my dad, the chance to be a student athlete myself and have a fantastic experience, and seeing many of my friends have experiences that were much less positive, more destructive. All of those things have given me a long, long-term interest, I would say passion for this subject.
So you taking this new role with the Knight Commission, is this part of you wanting to grow up to be like your dad in some way?
Well, I think it's trying to build upon his work and honor his work and his legacy. And both my parents are educators, and both were in different ways, you know, just extraordinarily influential in my thinking and obviously my life's work. And so if I can help to build upon the base that he tried to work on, and I think more importantly, try and live the values that were so important to him, that's an amazing opportunity to have.
So I want to make a reference, I'll make several references to an article that came out in USA Today not that long ago about you and taking this new role. And the writer notes toward the end of the article that the commission, the Knight Commission, has its roots way back in the 80s, and that many of the challenges facing college athletics and its role in the academy are the same as they were way back then. So what sort of difference do you want to make?
Well, you know, so something like, you know, intercollegiate athletics is a very, very complicated and complex situation. I think there are things that are amazingly positive about it, and there's things that I think are pretty disastrous. I will say broadly that the pace of change has been too slow.
Glacial, I think you said.
I did say glacial. Not everyone agreed with that, but I try and be honest and say what I think. But it's our job to push, and to push with a sense of urgency. I will say a counter example was when I was Secretary of Education, building upon, you know, so also a lot of the Knight Commission's work and talking about having a higher graduation rate to be able to participate in March Madness. I went and gave a speech to the NCAA board, which, you know, didn't necessarily go over extraordinarily well, but talked about how it didn't make sense for there to be some minimum requirements there and really challenged them to raise the bar. Well, as a matter of fact, in the next, of course, the next year they did. And the year after the University of Connecticut men's basketball team won the national championship, they were ineligible to compete the following year. So there are counterexamples to that glacial pace of change. I think whatever we can do to continue to nudge and encourage and push where we have to, we want it. We need to do that. We, I think, have a moral imperative to do that.
All right. In this article and in other instances, you've mentioned the academic progress rate, APR. What's your opinion of the APR? And to me, it seems like a very low bar.
So it was a huge step in the right direction by the NCAA, again, to see it actually have some teeth and to see behavior change. And guess what? Graduation rates have gone up. That's very encouraging. But to your point, that for me was a starting point, not an ending point. And I think it's a very fair, you know, conversation and policy discussion to have. Is there a time where that APR should be raised? And I think that's the kind of thing that there's no final victories here, and we have to keep pushing and trying to get better, and again holding universities accountable that their goal is not just to, you know, to win games and make, you know, or make money for the university. The goal is to ensure that student athletes are actually getting a quality education and walking out at the end with a diploma in their hand. And we all know that when that happens, that's a life transforming opportunity and changes for, you know, particularly for first generation college goers, changes the trajectory, not just of their lives, but their family's lives for generations to come. So the stakes here are very, very high. And where there's progress, that's great. Let's celebrate it. But let's not sit back and rest on our laurels and say mission accomplished. Let's figure out what's the right next step. And I think APR is a great example of a place where, you know, we should be thinking about what's the next appropriate step on that journey.
Sports Focus, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now back to the show on 97.9 FM WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking with Knight Commission's new co-chair, Arne Duncan, about that commission and the proper role, the proper relationship of athletics and academics. Arne, we were talking about the APR, and you mentioned that as a starting point. Just to make sure our listeners understand that the APR, as I understand it, and correct me where I'm wrong, it's basically you get a point for returning to school the following year, the athlete does, and you get a point for maintaining a 2.0 GPA, which leads to my assessment of that being a pretty low bar. Number one, is that correct? And number two, what would be the next step?
Yeah, so for me, the whole thing is really looking at not our student athletes just, you know, able to participate or, you know, academically as eligible to participate, but are they actually graduating? And again, the good news is that graduation rates are going up. The good news is that student athletes actually generally have a better rate of graduation than students who are not athletes, which people don't always realize. But the question is still, is that bar for graduation too low? And you also have on, and there's been great work that Richard Labcheck has done, that often at universities, very significant disparities between the graduation rates between, let's say, white student athletes and African American or Latino student athletes. So big racial disparities there. And so I think we have to continue to look at, you know, do we raise, we got in the game, which was important, but is it, you know, the appropriate time now or at some point in the future to think about raising those standards there to be able to compete.
So one of the questions that goes along with this is, you know, let's say the 2.0 is the bar. How do you attain that 2.0? What sort of classes are you taking? Which classes are students being directed into because they're an easy A as opposed to something that the student might really want to take? How much? This is not an easy fix.
And that's a piece of it. But for me, again, at the end of the day, I'm laser focused on graduation rates. And that's a part of the calculation, obviously. And, you know, obviously, while we'd love a student to have a 2.5 or a 3.5 versus a 2.0, and to your point, exactly, they have to be taking meaningful, real classes. And if they're not, if they're taking sham classes, that's a huge, huge, huge challenge. It makes no sense whatsoever. At the end of the day, you know, again, making sure those graduation rates are going up, not down, and making sure there aren't massive disparities among racial groups on any, you know, on any team or any university. Those are the issues that, for me, you know, rise to the top of my list in terms of sense of urgency.
Another thing that seems to be pretty high on your list would be coaches of color. Will you address that?
Yeah, it's so interesting to me. And the Knight Commission has, you know, produced some fantastic data, and my numbers won't be exactly right, but just approximations that there are, you know, roughly 50% of college football players, student athletes, are African American, but only like 10% of coaches are African American, and those are, you know, five times as many players as there are coaches of color. And in basketball, it's like a 2-to-1 ratio. And I just think that, you know, we have to value diversity. And I you know, it's hard to talk about race in America, and it's hard to talk about prejudice and bias. But I would defy anyone to tell me that bias isn't still alive and real, and prejudice is still alive and real. Here in 2017, I don't have a better way of explaining the massive gap between that talent pool of potential coaches and who's actually hired. And the thing for me, why, again, I think, you know, college sports and collegiate athletics, I think, can be, you know, again, such an extraordinarily positive experience for participants, but also help to lead the broader society where we need to go. And you look at how, Jackie Robinson, you know, going to Major League Baseball, and just how that changed America. And I look to places like sports that, you know, tend to be much more diverse than other areas of our society. I look to sports to be a place to break through in areas of diversity and to lead and to set an example and to move society in a better direction. And so clearly there's an absolute mismatch between the type of talent pool that's available now to potentially coach and those are being hired. But, you know, obviously the numbers don't always tell the whole truth, but they certainly don't lie.
So is the answer, Arnie, just simply hire more black coaches, or is it more involved than that?
I think at the end of the day, that is the answer. and again, you know, coaches of color. But what we want to do is, again, challenge people to think openly and honestly and ask the tough question internally and look in the mirror as to why that hasn't happened and what they can do proactively to look at a more diverse pool that will help them be successful, you know, on the court or playing field, but who are committed to the success of their student athletes in the classroom as well. And the fact that there's so much talent that frankly has been denied that opportunity, I think does a real disservice to student athletes, to intercollegiate sports generally, and to universities. And again, the chance to lead our society more broadly, the chance for college sports to be at the forefront of taking on these tough issues and committing to doing better, I think there's a remarkably important leadership role there that I would desperately hope that intercollegiate athletes and athletics and college sports could play and could start to play right now.
Sports Focus. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now back to the show on 97.9 FM WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus and our discussion with Knight Commission co-chair Arnie Duncan, the role of athletics and academics as they what the proper role should be. Arnie, you were talking about role models and coaches and what have you, and it's not just there aren't that many coaches of color. It's how coaches are rewarded. They're not rewarded for how well their athletes do in the classroom or how often they graduate. They're rewarded for success on the field or on the court. I take it from what you've said before, that needs to change.
it does need to change. And just going back on the diversity point, for me, it's not just more coaches of color, it's more women's coaches. And you look at, particularly in the women's sports, where you would think there'd be lots of women coaches, and in many places there aren't. And so, you know, just thinking broadly about diversity there, you know, race, gender, background, there's, again, just lots of talent that has been left out. But, yeah, it's so interesting. I always say that, you know, monies reflect our values. And when you look at what universities have done in terms of structuring the contracts of coaches, virtually all the bonus money goes to wins and losses. And so that's a university saying very clearly to coaches that what we value, what we care about, is you winning games. And I think that creates an incentive structure that is pretty scary, honestly. It's definitely not in the best interest of student athletes. If you look at in the football, FBS team work, football performance bonuses are 15 times the size of academic bonuses that the CFP allocates to each FBS team. Again, whether it's the group of bowls, whether it's what colleges are doing in terms of structuring the contracts of their coaches, at every level, what folks are basically saying is that what counts is wins and losses. And I think, again, in terms of values, and really, you know, reminding ourselves of the basic fact that these are institutions of higher education. These are colleges and universities. Their mission is to educate and to create educational opportunity. When you look at how money is allocated, that is not where money is going.
The one thing, Arnie, that we've discussed a lot on this show and that I'd like to get your take on is the arms race in college athletics. The next biggest, boldest, brightest, you know, shiniest object to attract these 18-year-olds, including now at the University of Central Florida, a water ride, Lazy River. Where does it stop?
That's a great question. And the short answer is, I don't know. You know, the money is the driver here. I've talked to folks about this. I don't have an easy answer as to what to do about it. But is it of concern? Absolutely.
You know, I ask the question, where does it stop? Because if UCF, for example, feels that to be competitive, they have to build a Lazy River, well, the next week, Alabama built a Lazy River. And the week after that, Oregon builds a Lazy River. So why is this seen as the advantage?
I it's clear why it's seen as an advantage. It's because they think they're tapping into something that student athletes want. But that's not the question for me. The question is, what do you do about it? And when you look at the fact, again, there's a myth that all these, you know, football teams are making money for their universities. The truth is, the vast majority of football teams are actually costing their universities, frankly, lots of money. And do you know who's subsidizing those Lazy Rivers and the coaches' contracts? Who's subsidizing that are fees that, you know, tuition and extra fees that are being charged to non-student athletes. They are directly subsidizing that. And again, that's not fair. It's not right.
And they don't get to ride on the Lazy River. They don't get to ride on it. Yeah.
And I think, you know, at some point, you know, what happens, at some point, maybe you have a rebellion of students, of parents saying, I'm tired of paying these exorbitant fees to have coaches have $5, $6, $7, $8 million contracts that are, you know, paying for Lazy Rivers. But it'll take, you know, because these are direct costs directly to students at those universities who are not athletes. And at some point, parents and students may say, we've had enough. And that may, you know, what happens, that may be what it takes.
And that does it for this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guest, Arnie Duncan. Thanks also to engineer Gary Kirk. And as always, thanks to you for listening. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall at the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a service of UNC School of Media and Journalism.